On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about the newest information in the newest part of the census that has been released. It's about aging. We are a country that is getting older. And what is this going to mean for us when it comes to looking after those people who are now pushing upwards? We are going to talk about that one. We are also going to be chatting about the new rules the CFL has brought in. They are wild, some of them. One in particular. You will want to stick around to find out what the CFL is proposing to do in 2022 to help spur offense. I'm pretty sure you have never heard of anything like this before. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
The latest chunk of the census that was taken in 2021 and comes out, as I said a few moments ago, in bits and pieces on different topics. The latest part came out today and it deals with the age of Canadians. And there's a number of different things in there that's pretty interesting, but certainly something that really stands out. One of the fastest growing segments of our country, of the people in our country, are those in the 85 plus group, up 12% from the last census in 2016. That compares to the broader population growing by 5.6%, more than double. That is the growth of the 85 plus crowd. And it's doubled since 2001. Now, this is a wonderful thing because we love seniors and we want people to live a long life. We don't want people dying off early, which is the alternative. We don't want that. But experts, many experts, are now saying, look, there is in this good news also a recipe for a looming disaster. I want to bring in Dr. Lauren Griffith. She is a co-principal investigator with the Canadian Longitudinal Study on Aging. She is an associate professor in the Department of Health Research Methods, Evidence, and Impact at McMaster University. Doctor, thank you for the time today.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Well, listen, we're glad you're here because this is such a topic that it's going to affect all of us, whether we're close to that age or we just have parents or grandparents or someone. Because, look, I don't think I'm saying anything too brilliant here, but older people means more needs health-wise, more medical needs, more costs. All those things are true, correct?
No, I think it's absolutely true. But one of the other things that we know from our research with the Canadian Longitudinal Study on Aging is that people that are getting older, Canadians, it's a really diverse group. But in general, they're also staying more active, healthier, and engaged longer. But certainly in terms of the sorts of things that are more common with aging, like having, you know, multiple chronic conditions and things like that, these are definitely areas that we need to concentrate on. And certainly it's not something that is shocking or new. It's something that we've known for a long time is coming. But one of the kind of interesting things is actually the fastest growing group is centenarians in Canada. So people over 100 years old.
Huh.
So there's over 9,500.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I just actually read something that there's a new oldest person in the world who was just crowned today, a nun in France who's 118. I don't know how many we have around here, but maybe I should have worded it differently. Is not necessarily that if you're over 85, you're going to need health, but the possibility, the odds that you're going to need more medical care go up certainly. And it sounds as though, and again, anything I say that you disagree with, feel free to correct me, but from everything we've been hearing for the last number of years, we don't really seem to have a system built for that kind of sudden load of people who are going to need that care.
Yeah. And again, it's really not a sudden load. I think it's something that, you know, the planning that we need to do is started. But you're right. It's absolutely critically important that we are cognizant of these changes in the population. And, you know, we can look at other countries that are in the G7 that are, you know, that are ahead of Canada in terms of kind of the aging population, like Japan, where they have 25% of their population is actually 65 and older. And, you know, we can learn a lot in terms of some of the things that they're doing there in you know, trying to prepare for their older population.
Do we have, okay, so there's a bunch of different things that we would need. I mean, it's going to cost money if we do have an older population because of what we said, but leaving that aside, because I think we know that that's the reality, do we have the experts? So all of a sudden now we've got all these people who have may have different health needs that are specific to aging. Do we have enough experts to be able to handle this?
I mean, that's a really good question as well. And again, I think that we are putting these things in place. But as well, when you think about the aging population, we think about the number of people that are kind of getting ready for retirement age. And again, now like 1 in 5 people are between 55 and 64. So are kind of ready to retire. And again, we're at a different time now than we've ever been in terms of COVID and people changing the way they work and people changing, you know, their directions in work. So having that capacity is really critically important.
One of the topics that I believe every party running in the provincial election has talked about this. I don't think I'm wrong there. Long-term care. It's certainly been something that's been an issue during COVID, we know. But even going forward, we don't clearly have enough long-term care beds. We don't have enough facilities that way. But can we create enough? Is it plausible to believe that we can fix this problem in short order to deal with all these people who need it?
I don't think necessarily in short order. The planning has to be in place, and you're right. It has to be in place now. But there is the capacity to actually increase the number of spots in terms of long-term care. But as well, the way that it is delivered. You know, there's some places that, in terms of long-term care, it's a bit more of a model where, you know, families are taking more part of it. It's not necessarily the kind of institutionalized care, but it's, again, doing things in kind of more of a communal setting in some of these places. And so I think we need to be open to thinking about new ways to deal with these problems. And thinking about the baby boomers now, so the oldest baby boomers are now turning 76, and you know they're not at the age necessarily where they're starting to get to that critical age where they're having problems. But hopefully, this is a group that's going to be quite important in advocating for the changes that are needed.
Do you think that's going to be the new normal? What you just said about communal living. Do you think that mom or dad, elderly mom or dad, living with their adult children is going to be much more common?
Or not even with their elderly or with their children. It could be in again, kind of more communal places, but there's more of a connection with the families that are part of the care. So it's not just kind of going away and being more in an institutionalized setting, but having something that's a bit more like a community setting.
Because the other thing that was, someone raised this, I had not thought of this, and then they brought it up and they said, because kids, and I don't mean like children, I mean adult kids, it's a challenge because those that we're talking about now moving into this elderly phase had fewer children than the generations before them. And so somebody said, you know, there's not as many kids because now their kids are going to be older too, and they may be gone. If you're banking on just moving in with your adult children, that may be a risky proposition because they may not be there for you.
Yeah, that is the case. And I think more so than now, you know, we see, older children moving back with their parents. You know, it's a different situation now, I think.
We got just a few seconds left here, but I read today that a few experts, and I don't know who they are, but they're saying they're estimating that by 2050, so less than 30 years from now, we could have 2.7 million Canadians who are 85 and older. And with all that we've just been talking about, 30 years seems like a long time, but is 30 years enough time to prepare for those kind of numbers and what would be needed if that's true?
Well, I think that, you know, we're really not going to have a choice to prepare for that. We have to prepare. And I think that in terms of, again, it's nice to have these census numbers because it really hopefully we'll get some of these, you know, important topics as part of the, you know, discussions and the debates with the upcoming elections, and hopefully be motivational in terms of putting these topics to the forefront, because I agree with you, it's critically important, and it's something that's coming. It's not something that, you know, we can divert.
No, and you can't just say, we don't have room for you, go somewhere. I mean, I suppose we could, but that's a horrible society if that's what we do.
No,
Dr. Lauren Griffith, really appreciate your time today. Thank you for taking a few minutes.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Earlier today, we got this press release sent out, showed up in the inbox, from the CFL announcing a bunch of things that it is going to be doing this year. And this comes from discussions that have been had. You'll recall back around the end of the season, there was a great commotion because the suggestion was made and not shot down by the commissioner that they may investigate going to four downs. And the reason they were going to do this maybe was because the offenses in the CFL have stagnated, have suffered. They're not scoring at the rate they did. The defenses are much better. And remember, the CFL always was the offensive game. Tons of fireworks and 55, 52 wins. And then all of a sudden, that's the NFL, and we're seeing scoring go down up here. So what were we going to do? Well, out come the tweaks. And to help us, let me bring in a guy who knows his way around a football field, not only because he's on the officiating crew for the Buffalo Bills games as part of the chain gang, but he is a guy who has played football and covered football. And as it turns out, quite by coincidence, has a brother who officiates in the CFL. So it's all coming together. Steve Foxcroft joins us. Sir, how are you?
Scott, I'm good. You know, before we get to the football, I got to tell you, I'm one of the few people who toured the Hershey plant in Oakdale, California.
Oh.
There's two Hershey plants. One that's Hershey, of course, in Pennsylvania. And then there's a West Coast plant that serves the West Coast. And it's in Oakdale, California, the cowboy capital of America. And like you described, an amazing tour to go on. So I just had to throw that little tidbit in there.
And do they do the same thing down there? Do they pump chocolate smells into the store?
You have to get an increase on your debit card when you go in because of that. Yeah, because then you're just taking everything you can, all the chocolate, all the gifts, everything.
I brought home, and it was not a good idea what I did, but I brought home the biggest chocolate bar I could find. I think it was 5 pounds. And the problem was it didn't fit in any cooler I had, and it was a hot day. It was in the playoffs, so it was like June something. And I now had to keep the air conditioning on the floor of my car at full blast to keep it from melting. And by the time I got home, my feet were like ice cubes, but at least the chocolate bar had held. So
there you go.
What was that?
Well done. So, hey, I think it's great what the CFL did today, but do you think everyone was just going out of proportion to worry about changing some of the real Canadiana of it, and especially the three downs?
Well, they didn't do that. So I think everybody can breathe a sigh of relief for now. And I still don't expect they're ever going to, but I think we can breathe a sigh of relief that seems to, for now, be off the table. But Steve, I want to go through a few of these rules. We won't get to all of them. And sometimes we'll build up to the big one. Let's start with the lead here. Let's not bury the lead. To me, the wildest rule, and I was joking with Ben a little while ago, that I think what happened is all the guys from the CFL were sitting around having a bunch of beers, and it got late in the night, and the hard liquor came out, and they were loaded. And finally, someone said, "I got an idea. Let's have two quarterbacks on the field." And everyone went, "Yes, two quarterbacks." And there are now, you can have two quarterbacks on the field at one time in the CFL. I love it.
So now, to me, though, you could have had two quarterbacks on the field before. Just you'd have to have the ratio in play, right? So to me, I don't know if that's going to be used very much. And it's almost like a touch football thing. So that one is kind of crazy. And you said, like, Ben's a bartender, and he was probably at the meeting serving everybody up the drinks and got to that point, right? We know Ben and his talents and how persuasive he can be.
Here's where I think this will be used. And I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be on every play, certainly. It's going to be a gimmick or a gadget thing or whatever. But I think where this may be used is if a team has a great pass rush, especially if they've got a guy who's a star pass rusher. He's got to line up one side or the other, and usually they know exactly where the pocket is, and that's where they're aiming for. If you put two guys, so you have the center in the middle with snapping the ball, and off, not nobody directly behind him, but both of them a little bit off to the side, and you don't know which way he's going to snap the ball to which quarterback, that takes a lot of that ability to get to the pocket and create chaos from that pass rusher away, because now you don't know where you got to go.
I agree with you. Like, that's the one area where I think it may change and how they would use a second quarterback, because the way that I think traditionally we would see it, or it's been used in the past, but it's always been with a receiver, a slot yep. back or something, rather than a second quarterback by name or by name of position, is more like the lateral situation or the, you know, pass backwards and then they throw it forward again. I think that's where also we see this happening, right? But I like the way you just described it, where the rule itself could be used to gain an advantage, right? Like, throw the defensive pass rush off if you're having trouble. Like, if you have offensive linemen that get hurt through the year. So it might be a way to just create more time and space for them. So I like the way you've drawn it up there.
Well, or, I mean, look, in the past couple of years, now Jeremiah Mazzoli is not with the Ticats anymore. He's with Ottawa. But in the past number of years, there has been discussion of, well, which guy fits the Ticats better? Dane Evans in his style or Jeremiah Mazzoli in his style? And which one do you prepare for if you're the other team? Do you go for the guy who's a little more running around and creating stuff, or do you go for the guy who's a little more of a pocket passer? Well, what if you put them both out there? And again, you don't know which one the ball is going to go to. That could really mess up what you're preparing for as a defense, especially when, all right, so you're a defensive coordinator. And again, using the example we just gave, even though Mazzoli's gone, you see Jeremiah Mazzoli run out on the field. You have a pretty good idea what that next play might kind of look like. You see Dane Evans run out in the field to replace him. You kind of know what they're going to do. How do you, as a defensive coordinator now, call a play down to your guys if you've got two completely different style quarterbacks and you don't know which one's getting the ball?
I think for sure you're going to not rush as much, right? You're going to play more contain. So the one thing, though, the description I was using is always allows, it still has to be an onside play. Like, if you try and stretch the field with it and maybe create more one-on-one matchups with an onside pass with the ability to then throw it again onside downfield, like, that's where I see it happening. I'm intrigued by your situation, though, because how far apart, like, are they, you know, like a split running back situation? Are they 4 yards apart? Are they, can you have it where one guy receives it and he might do a pitch, like a lateral pitch to the other quarterback who's maybe just lined up over the tight end or just out in the slot area? Like, it just creates a dynamic and opens up the playbook, and like some of the other rules, the other one with the hash marks, it opens up the field more, right? And that's what they're trying to do.
Let's hope so. And my hope, and look, when this whole thing comes to be, we could all be very disappointed because offensive coordinators look at this and say, stupid gimmick, not interested. That's not what we're going to do. We're not about that kind of crazy stuff. That could happen, and we may not see it very much. But I don't know, Steve. I'm kind of hoping that when this thing came out, now I know that they would have had a heads up, but I've kind of got this picture in my mind of the offensive coordinators like staying up really late tonight because now all of a sudden they've been inspired to see what they can draw up with two quarterbacks on the field and pulling out some just great creativity that the CFL once upon a time was known for.
Right, exactly. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how much they utilize the two quarterback rule, because I have a feeling we may just, sometimes we are too traditional, right? We may just stay, or will it be in an end of game situation when you're behind and you're trying to like pull out all the stops to score? Yeah. That might be a time when we see it.
Absolutely. We'll see.
Kind of like pulling the goalie in hockey.
And again, why not? Like, when you say that, And we have things in football, the two-minute drill that, when teams are down or whatever at the end of a half or the end of a game, they go into the hurry-up offense. Well, You know what? Many teams, most teams, save it for the end of a game on a drive they have to. But remember, once in a while, you end up with a team like the early 90s Bills with Jim Kelly and the K-Gun offense where they decide, we're going to do this all game long. And maybe somebody in the CFL looks at this and says, yeah, everyone else might think it's a gimmick, but you know what? I think we can actually work with this and really change that. I'll give you one other example of where, and this goes back to high school. St. Thomas More here in Hamilton has been the top high school football team in the country for the last number of years, really. When they got to the championship game this year, they ran into a team, and I can't remember the name of the play for the life of me, but they ran into a team that had a gimmick play that St. Thomas More had never seen before. And you want to know something? They ran it again and again and again. And it worked and it worked and it worked because it was new and it was something that the coaches had put in that was really clever. And look, it was against the best team in the country and they ended up winning. I could see a CFL team bringing this in more than just once in a while.
Well, you said the word clever is huge in sports, right? And especially the coaching aspect of it. So if they can be clever, and then the other thing about football, it's all about deception. So those two words, being clever and being deceptive, get you a long way on the football field.
All right, another rule, which we'll, and we'll come back to this one, because I'm sure once we see this, we'll be talking about it. But another one is in the CFL up until now, there have been two different rules for no yards. Anyone who doesn't, well, people who know football know what no yards is. Those who don't, when the ball is kicked to the other team in the CFL, the player has to be able to retrieve the ball with a 5-yard ring around him with no players, which the idea was this gives the kick returner a chance to maybe break a kick return, which is an exciting part of the game. Well, in the past, what's happened is if the ball has bounced, they can, it's, and you break that no yard, that 5-yard thing, it's a 5-yard penalty. But if you catch it on the fly, it's a 15-yard penalty. Now, any no yard penalty, bounces, not bounces, every no yard penalty is 15 yards.
I like it. I like it because it's kind of the way it used to be way back in the old days. And then we had specialists, you know, Gizmo Williams and guys like that. Well, way back in the day, Johnny Rogers, but let's just talk a little more. Like you mentioned Isaac on Love Boat earlier. We got to get at least to the younger listeners so they know who we're talking about, right? But there were specialists now, and then coaches are getting smart. And what they were doing was just telling them, let's take the penalty. We'll take the 5 yards. That just negates any return. So they were doing it. It was becoming commonplace for them to just take the 5-yarder. So this is a good move by the CFL to kind of get back to what the original spirit of the, and intent of the rule is to allow the halo, we'll call it, the 5-yard halo, that gives these guys a chance to get a running start or a good shot at a return. And that brings excitement to the game. Like the NFL has gone the other way. They've tried to reduce the kicking game, returns on the kicking game. And I think in the Canadian game with the wide field and everything, it's one of the most exciting parts.
Sure,
of
it is.
Game.
I love it. And the reason the NFL has been trying to get rid of it is because it is the most exciting part, but it's also the part of the game where guys are running directly at each other at full speed, and it's a chance to be hurt. I mean, this is where guys get concussions and get wiped out. I mean, wiped out. So I get it.
In a couple cases, like it's high speed collision, high impact. So I understand why the NFL is trying to reduce it.
You did mention though one of the things that you know, the coaches got smart. Is there there is nothing in sports that coaches cannot ruin in time. There really isn't. They will find a way to screw up every single rule, to find the loophole or the catch or whatever. And I have a lot of friends who are coaches, but man, do they ever ruin games.
I agree. And they ruin the guy who comes up and is a superstar for a while. Like, remember Jeremy Lin, Lin Sanity?
Yeah.
And then once they get film on it, and once they understand rules and how to circumvent them, they destroy both. They destroy the rule, and they destroy those upstart guys who become sort of a story and someone to cheer about. And it's usually an underdog situation, right?
But all coaches should be banned. No coaches in any sport.
Turn them all into referees.
There you go. All right. So one more, and then we're really late, and I wanted to talk about the Raptors quickly. We'll see. But the other one that I wanted to get to here is, and there's a lot more. People can go look this one up. There's a lot more. And this is an interesting one that I had never considered. But when the play is over, the referee or an official will place the ball where the ball had stopped, but on one of two hash marks on either side, depending on which side the play had stopped on. If you're tackled on the right-hand side of the field, where you are, where the hash mark is, that's where that play is going to start. You'll notice if you watch, I assume people have known this, that they don't start from the middle of the field. It's always on one side or the other, which is why you have strong side and weak side. The play, the pass is a lot shorter to the near side. That's so there more balls go there. It's a lot further throw to get to the wide side of the field, which means there's not much action there. What the CFL has said is we're moving our hash marks way closer together into the middle of the field. So now both sides of the field basically are going to be equally open to attack. Good idea?
I like it too, again. And this one, I actually reached out to brother Dave Foxcroft. So Dave's down in Florida with a couple other CFL refs, Ben Major and Jason Maggio, and they're into the rule book and having like a training camp before the training camp. So they hit the ground running. I reached out to those three guys to get their opinion on this. And they had some interesting comments too. They said the same thing what you just said. Both sides are almost the wide side because the hash marks will be 9 yards apart. And what it does, in their opinion, is it keeps the defensive backs honest. It'll make them play straight up on guys, and they can't use the short side of the field to their advantage. And then the other interesting comment they made is, as you know, our game is full of Americans. They said the coaches, who we just talked about, and we know how we feel about them, it allows them to bring their playbook up and not adjust it. So, because it'll be similar to what they've been doing all their life down in America with the field, kind of with the hash marks like that. And I thought that was a very interesting thought process the guys had there was the playbook. They don't have to adjust it as much. So,
yeah, it'll be I want to see if this means that a quarterback, if this now benefits quarterbacks who don't have quite as strong an arm because they don't have quite as far to throw on the weak side, or if this benefits the quarterbacks with a strong arm even more than it did before because both sides are now, to some degree, the wide side. We'll have to see which one that is.
Right? When you throw that out pattern, you don't necessarily have to throw it to the sideline as much as if you throw it right at the break when the receiver has that step on the DB, because the DB has to play honest, that he might go over the top. Like, that's where we might see it come into play. So I think that'll be fun, too, and it'll open up the game some more.
I left you no time. We've got 30 seconds left. Raptors play tomorrow, game 6. They've come back from 3-0. Now it's 3-2. Are they still playing after tomorrow?
I think so. They just can't look past tomorrow. Take care of business. Do it at home. The place will be bonkers. Take care of business, and then let's have some fun on Saturday, game 7. Oh,
last question. Who plays more playoff games this season, the Raptors or the Maple Leafs?
I think the Raptors. Unfortunately, I think the Leafs are going to go up against the Lightning, who are putting up 8 goals on everybody every night, and they're ready, and they know what they're in for. So, unfortunately, sorry, Leaf fans, but Raptors.
Well, the Leafs have to get at least 6 to match that, so we will see. Steve Foxcroft, love having you on always. Thanks for doing this.
No problem. Anytime. Talk soon.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.